What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Keeping It Real podcast. Today, I have a very, very special guest with me. And today's guest, someone I've known for a very long time, someone I've known before I even started on this journey as an online entrepreneur, someone who's been a big inspiration in my journey, you know, someone that kind of raised my standards, let me know like what's possible. And just being able to see his journey just, you know, always kept me inspired, always got me thinking bigger. We've actually already had him on the podcast 2 years ago. Crazy to think about that. But 2 years ago, had him on the podcast. You know, we had a good chat last time, but had to bring him back on with my good friends. Hayden Bowles here today. Hayden, how you doing, man?
Dude, I am doing amazing. Better than I'm talking to you now, man. This is the best. It's been too long.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. It's been a while. It's so great to catch up with you. You are currently talking from Puerto Rico, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My place down here in Puerto Rico. And I think the last time we talked, it was Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I don't think you had shifted to Puerto Rico yet. So the last time we talked, when did you fully move to Puerto Rico?
I think it was a couple months after we spoke. Last, I'd like just bought one of my dream houses there. I was there for like 6 months. And at the end of that year, I made the decision to move to Puerto Rico for a majority of the year. And that's a 3-year commitment. So I'm now 2 years into that.
Okay.
I'd stay a little longer. Who knows? But yeah, it's been 2 years. It's been fun.
Yeah. How do you like, you know, having to kind of do that split living side of things, you know, living in Puerto Rico for 6 months out of the year and 6 months kind of just being free, going around? I know you said Arizona, traveling different parts of the world. How do you like that change versus, you know, when you just had a house in Arizona, you could stay there and travel and such?
Yeah. I mean, when you have two places, two homes, it makes it a little more difficult to travel because like you're already going to spend time at both of those.
Right.
And also geographically, Puerto Rico is so far off the map from any part of the U.S. that any travel is just a real pain in the butt. And I'm right now, I've been taking flights every week, you know, like,
oh my God,
it always has a layover. I mean, I'm spending like $7,000 a month just on flights right now. Like it's ridiculous. Jeez. And so that's a little bit frustrating, but it also doesn't happen all the time. So it's fine, man. It's fun. The beach is nice down here. Golf is great. And the tax rate, can't complain as well. So
yeah, speaking of the tax rate, I've been seeing certain things like, you know, Bali offering a 5-year, you know, whole tax-free thing. I know Dubai has some. Like, does that interest you, you know, going to that side of the world just to avoid tax? Or you're like, all right, you know, I'm going to stay somewhere close to U.S. I'll still pay lower percentage versus like no tax or whatever. But, you know, seeing some of these other tax exemptions from other countries, does that interest you at all?
Not really. When I was looking at Puerto Rico, I had a long list of spots. Switzerland, Italy, for an example, you pay $100,000 a year flat rate, no matter how much you earn. And then it's 0% after that. So there's a lot of different programs, Panama, Dubai. I looked at that. For me, my citizenship was non-negotiable, right? That was not up for debate. And so Puerto Rico is the only easy one that allowed me to get the best tax rate at 4% flat. Mm-hmm. And so going anywhere else, if I retained my citizenship, you'd be subject to FEI. That's the foreign earned income tax. Mm-hmm. And so it's still like a 20% rate. So it wouldn't be the best. There's a lot of digital nomads that travel through Bali and Thailand and they take advantage of that. And now Bali has their 5-year program, which I think is just an extended visa. You don't have to give up your citizenship. But no, it doesn't interest me to live that far away. And it would just be a much larger commitment. I don't think that interests me a lot. I'm building another company here in the States regarding the real estate. And so I'm physically present for that as well. Most of the work is digital, but I want to be closer. And I don't think I want to live way overseas right now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think, you know, there's so many other factors that when it comes to moving, especially moving and committing to living somewhere other than just money. So I respect that. I want to kind of touch on, I guess, like, you know, the early days. I know we talked about it a little bit on the podcast before, but I want to take a, you know, different angle, ask you different questions regarding that. Or before I even start this, I want to kind of give the context of the two recent videos that you had, which you were just kind of covering your journey from, you know, when you were 17, when you started this, what, like 16, 17, to where you are now at 22, like the ups and downs, the whole story. You know, even knowing you from when I was in high school and I was still going to school, seeing some of the decisions that you had made earlier, seeing the risks that you would take, you know, and like just like the independence that you had. And one thing I always say is that, one of the biggest transition into like, you know, from being a teenager to like an adult is really just that independence and that self-sufficiency, which I think you have been adopted, you know, that you've been adopting since like a very, very young age compared to a lot of people. I wanted to kind of talk about your headspace during that time and, you know, what allowed you to kind of take, be independent, number one, and take the path of that no one would take, you know, like, and probably take a path where you had a lot of resistance from the people around you as well. Just talking about, you know, your experience, your headspace, and what made you actually kind of commit and go through with it.
Absolutely. I mean, growing up, I was always trying to make a dollar, you know, and I think it's because I wanted to not have to ask if I wanted to go hang out with friends or go buy something from the store. And so it was just a little bit of the freedom. And at the time, you know, money meant freedom. And that was like the only variable to it. And so, you know, hey, if I have 20 bucks, I can go to Chipotle, you know? So little things like that. So that progressed. I was definitely nudged a little bit down the school path. That was like, hey, we don't really care what you do over here as long as this is taken care of, which makes sense. I mean, that's the responsible parental thing to do. Make sure your kid mm-hmm. gets good grades. But man, I struggled a lot in school. I don't think it was because I'm stupid or because I couldn't. I just mm-hmm. had zero interest. And I'm the type of person where if I have no interest, I can't fake it. You know, I can't just sit there and do it. And I won't. I was miserable. So I was always trying to find a way to make money. It was stock trading for a while. And it was just, you know, all the stuff in social media, which then led into e-commerce. So that started to make me like, you know, 1,000 to 3,000 a month when I was 16. That was like the first like, hey, something is working. And, you know, to be making that much as a kid, that's pretty good. And so I was like, this is awesome. I was spending all of it traveling to meet more people. And that, again, led into the e-commerce side of things. First dropshipping store pops off, and now I'm making a lot more than that. So like, as I turned 17, I start making some better money. And then through 17 is where things really started taking off. At that time, I had switched to online school. I had somehow convinced my parents to do that.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that, actually. Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that part of the story, but I had hired somebody to do it.
Yes, I do remember that as well. I do remember that as well.
And so that for me was the best outsourcing. It was 85 bucks a week. It freed up like 4 hours a day of my time and all of my headspace. And over the next 6 months, I mean, I built everything. I built the e-commerce company to a good level. It was doing like 40 to 60,000 a month in sales with a 30% margin. So making six figures a year from that. I'd started up the personal brand. 6 months later, we started opening up the education company inside of there. YouTube ad revenue is picking up, a little bit of affiliate marketing. So it was like, hey, now we're making, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60,000 a month net at 17. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I got a car so that I could have a little more freedom in Minnesota where I grew up. And then everything kind of crashed and burned with the online school a couple months after that, which was early 2018. And and because I failed all the classes and I refused to go back to school, that's when my parents said, okay, well, if you're not a student, you can't live at the house. So you remember that portion of the story. And so I found myself with a 14-day timeline to leave the house. And so day 13, I was on a plane headed to California. I shipped my car a couple of days before, put everything in there. Went to California, tried to stay with somebody who I thought was a friend. Everything mine got stolen a couple of days later.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah, I ended up struggling to find a hotel because, you know, you can't book one when you're 17. So I found somebody to do it, booked a hotel for 3 days, and I made $72,000 in those 3 days. And that's where like my view of a lot of things completely shifted. So it was an interesting journey. About a month later, I turned 18. Me and Abdul, a good friend of yours as well, we went and traveled for like 3-4 months. It was a great time. And then I moved back to California and lived at the beach for a while, which is where we really got to know each other well.
Yeah, facts. And I also say, I think you kind of not started, but you're one of the early internet e-com guys to go to Bali, to go to Thailand. Because I remember, man, I was in high school in class looking at you in Bali like, damn, like, you know, I want to do that too. And then we did that the next year together, which is kind of cool. But yeah, man, the Newport Beach time. Let's, you know, to kind of spin off in that question, to add a question onto that, you know, I know you said, first of all, when we first talked, I believe we're both 17, just turned 17. And I remember us talking about, I remember you saying exactly this, like, oh, you know, once I make 10K a month, you know, I'm gonna move to Cali, everything, I'll be good. I can do everything and all that, which is kind of funny to think back at now. But, you know, also, I guess talk about how it feels to kind of achieve your goals, some of these goals that you set at a young age, and like, you know, the thought process behind that. And we'll also talk about Cali in a bit, but just that part of it as well. Like, you know, at a young age, aiming for something and achieving that, because some people, that's their goal, right? Like, okay, I never want to work a job, or I'm gonna move here. And it takes years and years. You being able to do it at such a young age, like, what have you learned from that, going through these type of process, and just kind of, you know, moving forward after you hit that goal as well?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm a delusional optimist. You know, when it comes to setting the goal, I always believe in setting a larger target than you're going to hit, forces you to take a little bit of extra action. You get that extra couple percent. And so for me, I like, for moving to California, it took me longer than I expected, right? For me to make money, it took me longer than I expected, right? For me to buy a car, it took me much longer than expected. So I've never really hit the timeline. I've hit the goal, but it's usually all delayed by a year or two. And there's some quote that floats around where people say, you know, you can have everything you want, but it's usually just going to take, you know, a little bit longer. Like, whatever it is you want, it can get there, but it usually just takes a little bit longer. And so that's been very true. And again, I've never really hit my financial goals. I've never hit anything. It's just because I set it pretty lofty. So for me, it works better. I work better operating out of like the state of like trying to chase and like a little bit of fear and just really pushing, never, you know, always grateful, never satisfied is really what I say. And so
why do you think you're like that, bro? Because even that's the main thing I got from you when we first ever met, is like, here I am with probably 3,000 in my bank account. You're on your whiteboard writing, how do I make $100,000 this month? You know, and that, like, and I say that in a good way, because, like, it really raised my standards as well. Because I thought, again, 10K, this is everything. But you, here you are, 18 years old, saying, if I don't make 100,000 this month, I'm gonna burn all my business. I don't know if you remember that. You used to write that shit around. But what do you think? Like, you know, I think most people always like are underset their goals. Like, what made you always okay, like, be an overachiever? Like, okay, like, let's think this big, you know, let's go up there.
Yeah. I mean, number one, I recognized what money was and what a lot of it is. And so, like, for example, $100,000 is not a lot of money. Now, can it change somebody's life? Absolutely. But it doesn't make any material difference in the real long run. And it's not enough money to, by itself, offer any longevity, right? And so for me, from what I understood, I was like, hey, $100,000 is not that much. A million's really not that much nowadays. Like, you just need a lot, even if you're not living crazy. And so for me, I always understood that there was no option for me. There was no safety net. Now, looking back, I totally could have gone back home, but that would have, like, it never would have happened. Like, that would have been, admitting failure would have been the worst thing. I truly would have been homeless before I moved back home. And so since I knew there was nothing there behind me, like, I had to operate out of fear and make enough money to be like, hey, I'm good. And it took a while until I, like, kind of felt a little bit of like, okay, I've seen 2 years of consistency out of this business. I've got, you know, a lot of money liquid. I own my cars in cash. Like, I'm good. You know, there's enough income stream. And so it took a while to feel that. And that's a whole conversation in itself, how that's probably not a good thing to feel. But yeah, man, I mean, I was always pushing for that. You remember there in Newport, like writing it down on the wall and big whiteboards, and as you visualize it, keep it in front of you, look at it directly, be confronted by that. There's people I know who won't even open their bank account because they're like a little bit nervous about the balance. Like what? How else are you going to know what's in there? How are you going to move to the next level? Of course, just from a financial perspective, but you know, it's one of those things that I paid very close attention to because it mattered greatly to me. That was life or death. Absolutely. You know, and so it's been many years since then, and I was able to kind of take a little bit of the foot off the gas in terms of like month by month throttle. And so now I can look at a slight picture, which is important for future growth. And dude, it's been fantastic. I mean, I just remember those times in California, like really, really pushing and just trying to make more money and having my first $100,000 month. And then that next year there was, you know, every single month was $100,000, except for 1 month, it was like 96 and I was pissed. Dude, I was so mad. I was so mad. And so, you know, it's just one of those things where like, you just got to set that goal and you got to confront it and keep it in front of you.
I believe that, man. I believe high standards really just help elevate your life experiences, because if you're not willing to tolerate certain things, then you will do anything. Like you said, you were probably so mad that you said, I'll do anything to make sure that doesn't happen again when you hit that 96K month, you know, because your standards were that high. So I always tell everybody, yo, raise your standards. And, you know, that's something I definitely learned from you. A quick question on, because you know, I think from a young age you've had a lot of experiences traveling to different places and also having like different phases where you lived in certain areas for a period of time. Out of all these different places that you've lived, you know, LA for a bit, Newport, Arizona, even Puerto Rico now, like where has been like not the best, but it's also like a period of your time where it was like, you know, you like this place, you were growing as a person, it helped you, I don't know, inspired you or such, but all these little phases have you had, do you have like a favorite time, a moment in time?
There's a couple like key moments that really stick out. For me, Newport Beach was like one of the coolest times because I spent a couple months in complete isolation, right? I had no friends within 200 miles. Like I didn't know anybody. So I would go 2, 3 months without talking to anybody. I would talk to people on the phone and when I order food at a restaurant. That was it. Like I wasn't, imagine truly not interacting with a human for 3 months. Like it really starts in my head. Like I was talking to myself. I had hundreds of huge, you know, those like whiteboard flip charts. I had hundreds of those post-its all over my wall, just like surround, like it was just madness. And I loved it. I loved every second of it. And so for me, that was a huge business period of growth. I had a lot of personal growth towards the end of that. And then I started, you know, going back and forth, tag teaming in California with Arizona as well. And then I transitioned full time to Arizona. So California will always hold a special place in my heart. Absolutely. And that was always the dream since I was like 13. And so I was there. And then Arizona is the first place where I've like specifically put down roots, you know, where I like started to just build a little bit more of a life. I had a social circle, which was part of the reason I moved there. And, you know, I historically, I move every 6 months. And so that was the pattern for a long period of time until somewhat recently. And so, you know, even different cities in Arizona, I found where I want to live and like where my vibe is. So it feels good to know that and now being able to set down a little bit of roots, but Arizona is home. That's what I consider home.
Love that, love that. Yeah, for sure, man. Newport Beach for me, I always tell you whenever I get my memories on my phone, like, you know, a really important time in my life, a dope time as well, just going out Newport Coast, watching, looking at those houses. Even when we went to the dealership, that was like a cool experience for me in itself. A fun time. Let's quickly touch on e-com because I mean, that's how we kind of connected as well. That's what, you know, your personal brand was known for and is still kind of known for, and a business that you're still in. Let's talk about the change that you've seen. You know, I mean, we started pretty early where you could get an influencer. Facebook ads were so different, but now it's everything has changed. Talk about, like, you know, I guess the current state of e-com, even for the changes that you've seen and what you've done to kind of just adapt to this new, you know, new wave of e-com and the new way of doing e-com.
Yeah, I mean, I think over the last 5, 6 years that I've been in the space, there's been a lot of big shifts from the advertising perspective. You know, ad costs rise over time. Everybody knows that. Influencers have become increasingly more difficult to work with, more expensive, et cetera. Could still make sense. I was never huge on influencers to begin with. I preferred consistency. One thing that has changed massively is needing to put more attention on the back end. And you know this, you know, very well with emails and SMS and even just setting up a better fulfillment process and having better upsells to boost your average order value so that you can outbid your competitors and stay profitable on the front end. Those are all really important things. So over the last year and a half, I've transitioned probably 95% of my ad spend off of Facebook onto TikTok. And so that's been a huge shift. Google has never really been a great platform. I've hired multiple marketing agencies to try and get that to work, but it's never really been that good. But Facebook has always been huge for me. I've done well over 10 million bucks in sales there over the last many years. And then TikTok, you know, starting to spend, hey, we've spent a couple million bucks on TikTok now, like really learning that platform and getting that dialed in. So, you know, we'll do 3 to 5 million bucks this year through TikTok and just a slight sliver through Facebook. And so it's been good. There's less headaches with TikToks, with TikTok ad accounts. There's different headaches for sure. It's very different. And so that's been a fun process to learn, but a little bit more consistent, putting more attention on the back end. And you know, I'm always looking to scale that, but it always comes with different sets of problems. So I know I can always do a couple million bucks a year through there in sales at a decent margin. So yeah.
For sure. What are you currently doing in the e-com space now? I know you, do you still do you have a brand or do you have an agency currently? Or what is your main focus on that end?
yeah I mean, two main brands inside the e-commerce space. One that's kind of always been the Mac Daddy, the main one there. That product's sold 10 to 12 million bucks, and that partnership with the partner I had on that kind of fizzled out. But you know, just always focused on like a longer term project in there. And there's the occasional pop-up store here or there. I really try to avoid that. One of the things I've been doing over the last year and a half that's just gives me another leverage point of scale is a lot of people message me who have an e-commerce store and they need help. So instead of selling a consultation or a course or stuff, which are all great, those are things we offer. What I'll do is, if it's the right fit and the right business, I'll go in there and either buy or just take a small piece of equity, anywhere from like 25 to 50%, and then I'll scale it. And so you have my team involved. We handle everything. You know, we handle the back end. We, you know, completely rip out the fulfillment and fix that. All the emails, all the SMS, all the branding, the custom packaging, the social media content, we can put all of our people on it. And then we run the ads. And so it's a pretty easy way to scale. And you just, you already have something that started. You're not starting from scratch. And so that's a great way to directly get a higher leverage point and be able to make more money and have long-term, you know, investment into a real brand. And so that's been something that I want to do more of. I've just been extremely selective with bringing anybody on board for that. You know, I've done that twice. You know,
right. Wow. That's very, very selective.
Yeah. And it's worked really well both times. And so, you know, it's been a lot of fun, but that's kind of another leverage point in the e-commerce space. We had the advertising agency, haven't onboarded really any new clients in the last 8 months. The reason for that, we completely chopped out the beginner side of the agency. So I realized about 80% of the results in terms of revenue was truly coming from about 15% of our clients. And that 15% were people who came to us already doing sales. Because inside of my agency, what we do, we take a super small performance, like $2,000, $3,000 a month, and then we take a percentage of the profits, right? So when somebody's starting from scratch, it doesn't help us. And those people are usually more difficult to work with. They don't understand the business. They want to make a million in 2 weeks. It's just, they don't understand anything. And so we don't work with beginners anymore, just point blank period, not at all. And so that's been a great change. And just focusing on current clients and optimizing how we structure everything has just been a lot more fun.
Love that. It's cool to still see you kind of, you know, being involved in e-commerce and just kind of grow as since the first time you started and, you know, progress as you go. But something as I transition to the next topic, I want to mention, I remember you first telling me, I think when we were 17, that you're going to do, like, with your YouTube, you had a plan for it and you executed and it happened. Right. But I also remember when we were, I think, 18 in Newport, you would tell me, like, you know, I'm going to get into real estate. I know that's where I'm going to be making my money, but I'm not going to worry about it right now. I'm just going to focus on e-com, stack up. But when it's time, I will go ahead and, you know, start learning it and getting involved in that. Let's talk about the transition into that, man. Like, you know, going from e-com. And I think when the last time we talked, I think you owned a couple of houses, but not, you weren't doing real estate at the level that you do it at now. Let's talk about, you know, that endeavor in itself on that side, seeing, you know, you post content about it, going to these meetups, buying new properties, and even starting Bulls Capital. Like, I would love to kind of just hear from all about the real estate side of things.
Absolutely. Real estate for me has always been the longer term vehicle that I wanted to get into. When I was young, I always thought storage units were really cool. So that kind of sparked the idea. And then when you're making money, you need somewhere to put it, right? So I've always been like a business operator. That's where I've made my money, is in a business, not an investment. But to a certain degree, when you have, you know, a certain amount of money sitting liquid, it's just, at that point, it's just dumb, you know, because it's so much money that's not making you more money. And so there's a lot of approaches to take. You know, I've invested into other people's real estate deals where I do nothing. I just bring money to the table. I've done that multiple times. But then when I moved to Arizona, you know, I didn't want to buy property in California. I knew that much wasn't for me. So when I moved to Arizona, I studied the market, got connected with all the people I needed, mortgage broker, property manager, real estate agent. And I went and bought three properties in like 7 weeks, you know, so I bought two houses and a duplex for, you know, just over $1 million altogether. And those were like really, really great purchases. Sorry for the jets that are taking off. I live like in a private little airstrip here, but, yeah, I bought three properties, two houses and a duplex in a very short period of time. And then I didn't do anything, right? Because I wanted to see, how would these perform? What's the process to market to a tenant? How do we get a tenant? What does that lease look like? What happens when somebody leaves? What's the cost to clean the house or the unit? You know, do they break? I just wanted to learn the process. So I did that. I sat on those couple houses and the duplex for over a year. Then I bought my dream house, which is when we last spoke. That was my house in Arizona. So that brought me up to like four properties. And then after we spoke there, I've done two more investments into other people's properties. I'm part of a private island, 463 acres off the coast of South Carolina. That thing is great. We're building like 40 tiny homes on there right now.
Wow, so that's awesome.
Yeah, it'll be corporate rentals, big fitness companies. There's like a whole fitness track on there. The thing's awesome. It's super cool. You'll have to come check it out. It's
hell yeah, definitely we'll do that.
We'll go out there for a couple of days. But there's that. Invested in a property with a friend of mine in Connecticut, and then I bought 2 more fourplexes, a 6-unit, and right now we're buying a 48-unit underneath Bulls Capital that I just finished all the due diligence on. So we're moving towards closing with that. So underneath Bulls Capital, everything else has been self-funded. I've never used anybody else's money. I've had a lot of friends that offer and that want to get involved because they see what I'm doing with it. But so now underneath the fund, we can raise money from accredited investors, which means you have to be worth over $1 million or have made $200,000 a year for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So that's just like a little self-verification. It's SEC regulation, but you have to self-verify that. So now we're raising funds from those for this property. We're raising $1.4 million. And I'm really excited to just grow that side of things because I see the scalability. I've spent the last 2 years spending a lot of time and a lot of money learning. So I have some very good close friends that have $100 million worth of real estate, another one with $500 million. And so these are people I text and call, and like, they're just great friends of mine. And so I'm spending a lot of money to get in the right rooms just to build those relationships. Because for me, what's the best way to directly get into an industry like that?
Right.
Learn from somebody who's done it for a decade at a high level. And so I'm more than willing to do that. You know, I'm not a flipper. I'm not a wholesaler. I don't focus on like short-term stuff like that. For me, it's all long-term. So, you know, I would really like to be, and I will be, one of the largest apartment owners in this country. And there's reasons for that. Number one, systems and scalability. I believe that I have that advantage over most people in the real estate space. And number two is going to be the fact that there's time on my side, right? Most people in this in the real estate game are 60, 65, 70. Right. So the young players in that space are my friends who are 35 to 40. And that's considered very young, you know? And so just from a time perspective, real estate is a slower game, takes a lot of time, natural appreciation. And it's just one of those things that over time I can build a much bigger portfolio and I plan on doing it faster. Like right now I have more access to capital than most people who are starting just because of my social media. We can promote through there because of my friend group, you know, I have multiple people that are going to be investors who have millions and millions and millions of dollars that they want to invest, right? Mm-hmm. These are e-commerce people who make all of their money in their business, right? They don't make any money through investments. And so I know a lot of people like that who are business operators. They're not investors. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Like, I think you will make more money being a business operator than an investor for sure. But at the same time, if you can make, you know, 20% a year on your money, and you just consistently keep making money and adding it to that, that's how you build long-term wealth. And so for me, when I was like 19 going on 20, I understood the middle step of instead of making a bunch of money and buying what you want, make a bunch of money and buy an asset that will pay for what you want. And that one middle step, because trust me, I bought a lot of cars, I bought a lot of dumb stuff that, you know, I never lost a ton of money, but it was, you know, I should have bought the asset first, and it adds 3, 5, 10 years to that equation. So it's a very boring middle step that most people don't want to do. But I have seen through now being around people like the real estate group I'm in that I pay a salary to be a part of. I mean, there's about 250 people in there. We get together 3 times a year. We break off into smaller groups. You know, there's people all over the world, mostly in the US. Whenever I'm in someone's city, it's like you get together, you play golf, lunch. It's like the best just group of friends. Most of those people are over 30, 95%. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the people have been in the industry for 10, 15 years. And so it just gives you access to see how people think, what it looks like to be successful in that space. And again, I just have such a long-term focus with it, and I've gotten to see what it takes and the amount of wealth that these people can build over just a 5 to 10 year span. I mean, it's incredible, you know, because it's compounding returns and they're adding huge value to these properties. So yeah, that's what we're doing. You know, I'd like to buy another 500 units or so by the end of next year. That's kind of the target. So that'll be another, who knows how much based on the properties, but you know, we'll buy another $20 million worth of real estate, I would say, by the end of next year. That'd be the target. So after the acquisition of this property, that'll bring my portfolio to about 10 million, right? A good chunk of that is my own properties that are all self-funded. Mm-hmm. And then the newest property for 3.6 million, which is, you know, raised under the fund.
That is so awesome to hear, man. And even just seeing this side of things, it's very exciting. I think not just for, you know, yourself, but also like, I think you will start a wave because there's not a lot of people out here just really talking about long-term thinking. Like even like you said, talking about that middle step, like not many people were really thinking about that, you know? And as I started growing and I've known you for a while as well. And you've kind of always been like this where you'd have a nice car and nice crib, but you wouldn't spend money on sandals or like, you know, you're like always sacrificing.
I still have the sandals you bought me in my living room. And I bring that up to people because they're all scuffed. There's like stained blood marks on one of them. It's like, dude, yeah, man, those are great. Thank you.
Exactly, man. And man, it's a question in itself, bro, because I've seen you as someone that's always been focused, that's always kind of looked at the long-term picture and stayed consistent on the path and, you know, kind of been aligned with it, even though you've gone through your own obstacles and your fair shares of ups and downs. Man, it's so cool to see. And it's also, I mean, almost poses a question as well, like, how do you make sure you're kind of, you know, aligned to that long-term vision and you are focused? Because it's so easy for someone at your age with the freedom that you have, with the money that you have to kind of go ahead and, you know, do whatever the fuck you want, right? And really just kind of, it's easy to get distracted is what I'm saying. How do you always make sure, like, you know, you're staying on track and are consistent?
Sure. I mean, there's a couple things to it. Number one, just reduce everything down to the numbers. I think almost everything in life can be brought down to simple math. And, you know, a lot of people don't like that, but like the last two YouTube videos that I posted, I talked about a lot of personal stuff, right? But I also reduced myself to numbers, which I didn't want to do ever in a YouTube video, but I did. I talked about my exact taxable income every single year, direct financial losses, all of it, because there's something to be said about that. And so for me, it's a ratio. And so more income solves the problem. I spend $100,000 to $130,000 a year. That's how much I consume. So anything beyond that is not extra money that I'm going to spend, right? I could, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not how I live. And so anything beyond that, all of it is invested, like all of it. And so my strategy, when I was buying, you know, probably way too many cars, had 6-7 cars, bought a car for my grandpa, all this stuff. And you know, I had so much liquid cash laying around. So my simple solution was get rid of the money. I'd heard other investors talk about that. If you don't have the money, you can't spend it. And it was never like I was spending it on designer clothes or in the club where the money is gone, right? Mm-hmm. If you buy a car for $200,000, it's not worth zero.
Right.
You know, that's just spending the money. So, you know, I always took that approach. And so for me, I invest most of what I make and I never have a lot of cash laying around. Like mm-hmm. it's truly rare that I have a lot of money laying around. So because of that, you know, when I get a really good deal popping up for a crazy car or something, I usually can't take it. Because either I don't have enough money, you know, I could pull some money out of reserve accounts for the business or personal, but I would never touch that. You know, I have reserve accounts for the real estate. You can't access that. And so I keep a very small amount of capital because I know how much it takes to operate my business and my personal lifestyle. And so I go super aggressive. Like I honestly overinvest. You know, I'm constantly cash broke, constantly. But mm-hmm. I like that way because it pushes me. It keeps me in line with the bigger picture. And I know that I can always make more money for my business. And, you know, I know that I can generate. And so for me, that's helped a lot with staying long-term focused. But I've also seen people go like this. You know, there's been mm-hmm. a lot of e-commerce space as well, up and down. And it's just one of those things that I hate volatility. I hate it. You know, that's why I was in Newport. I mean, that was the start of like extreme consistency.
Right. Every
single month I hit my numbers. There was never a big up and down period ever. And so that's important to me. I prefer consistency. And I mean, my personality type, I don't think I could ever really work a job. That'd be an interesting one. It'd have to be a very specific company, but it's almost better in my opinion to have a company that pays you $500,000 a year and you know that you're getting that versus 1 year where you make $1 million and the next year is zero. I would rather just $500,000 a year. And so it's, you know, for me, that fluctuation is where a lot of people get instability. And I don't think that's smart. So I aim for consistency and I know that long-term real estate can bring that. You know, in a real way. You know, I have friends where every single month they're making $100,000 a month in free cash flow and they're paying down $250,000 of debt, right? That's going straight to their net worth every month, like clockwork. Mm-hmm. Like their tenants are CVS and like Starbucks. Wow. Like those are 40-year leases that are like guaranteed by AAA. Right. So it's like, you know, I see that side of it and I just think it's super cool.
I love that. I love that. It goes like, I've heard a quote, you know, it says, whatever gets measured gets managed, you know? So when you're doing that, you are more consistent. I really like that. Speaking of ups and downs, you know, in your video, that part of the video really, really that hit home for me in the sense of like, it was really good to see someone share that side of, you know, their life. It takes a lot of vulnerability as well. I learned a lot from it as well. I kind of wanted to ask on that, like, you know, when you're going through that phase during that time, I remember when you said, you know, you had all these like bad decisions that you made and obstacles and like money lost and people fucking you over and all, like, how do you, because those are, you know, stress and headaches that like 40-year-olds, you know, 50-year-olds go through, right? But here you are 21, 20, 22 going through this. Like, how do you keep yourself, you know, kind of on point to make sure you can, you know, come back versus just drowning in the failures and just kind of, you know, putting yourself down and such. But like, just talk about your headspace during that time and how you were able to kind of, you know, combat that and get back to yourself.
Yeah, headspace was clear, but full of chatter. That's how I think about
interesting.
It. There was noise, but it didn't pull me away from the long-term focus or what I had to do. And so I think the biggest thing was over the past 3 years, I had built such consistent habits on the action that I was taking that it wasn't really an option to stop doing that. Mm-hmm. So when everything happened and I was, you know, getting taken advantage of by business partners and, you know, we had a burn rate of $10,000 a day in the company for 3 months. Do the math on that. You know, it was really aggressive. And they started making some money out of it. And then I got, you know, $250,000 stolen from me from a business partner. They stole a car out of my garage, a fully built.
Yeah, that to me is wild. That when I heard, I was like, wait, what the fuck? A car?
It was a lot that happened. And again, completely my fault because I was the one overseeing it. I was the leader. I was not paying attention to detail. I didn't understand what would incentivize a person the right way. And I should have structured it differently. And that was 100% my mistake, lack of understanding, and that mistake won't happen again. And so for me, again, I lost about $1 million in 6 months when I was 20 years old, like that, just that right there, that's aggressive, you know? And so most people would get very emotional about that. They would just be pissed. They would be crazy. And all my friends and family were like, you need to sue this person. They stole a car. They stole the money and all this. And I was like, why? You know, there was a lawsuit that happened because of the car, but you can't sue somebody who has no money. And right. So it was one of those things where it was just a great learning experience. I learned a ton from it and I moved on. And so I never got distracted from the bigger picture goal. First thing I did was put a Band-Aid over it, stop all the bleeding, like not even a Band-Aid. I mean, we burned the tip of that artery and there's no more bleeding. So cut it all off, move on, get into a clear environment. I moved out of the house that I was in, still had the lease on it. And there were still people in there. Like they were asleep and I had a moving truck with moving guys there and I was out. I'm still friends with one of the guys. Like it's not, I just couldn't do it. And so I moved and it was one of those things that I just had to switch up my environment for me. So I did that. A couple months later, I had bought my house and you know, I just kept moving forward. And while I took major losses the first half of that year, I still came out of that year a little bit above break even, which was huge for me because I pushed super hard the last 6 months in the business. And I just tried to stay on track. You know, I tried not to let it derail me. Now, of course, there was periods where I was like, not happy. My headspace was a little bit clouded in terms of like, you know, how I felt about the situation. And it sucked. It just, you know, I try not to think about it much because there's nothing you can do to change it. So let's just learn from it and move on. That's what I'm all about. But yeah, I mean, you reflect on that, like, dang, what would have happened if this didn't take place? Because not only did I lose a million, I had completely stopped my other business, right? Completely. So the opportunity there, I was, you know, doing over 100,000 a month from that. So I lost like another 600 there. I also had bought, right as COVID hit, $150,000 of Tesla, Boeing, and Delta, mostly Tesla. The only reason I sold those stocks was to fund everything that was happening. I was going to hold them for just over a year to hit long-term capital gains. Had I done that, which I had already executed the plan, it just changed later, that would have been about $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. So what was the real opportunity? Like, I don't even want to get into the math of the opportunity cost. Yeah, you know, I'd be like, damn, but no.
It's a PTSD.
But it's like, you know, I stuff has always happened. And my whole philosophy behind it is it happened. So you can't change that, first of all. Like if I get shot in the shoulder, I think I'm going to be mad about it. Like what the hell? Like it's okay. Now my shoulder's bleeding. Let's solve the problem. Number one, how can we stop that from happening again? Mm-hmm. Do I need a bulletproof vehicle? So be it. Do I need to wear a vest? So like, you know, who knows? But it's just one of those things where you have to problem solve and move forward, learn from the situation and you know, respond, don't react. And so it's just one of those things where, you know, I try to keep a longer term, more level-headed focus. Mm-hmm. I've gone through so many things like that it's very difficult for something to disrupt.
Yeah, for sure. I can see that. And I was going to touch on one which I know you haven't talked about much. You only probably talked in that video for a bit, but I have like a, you know, different, I guess, perspective on the question of, you know, cancel culture is big nowadays in the celebrity world. I feel like you went through that in the e-com space in itself. How did that change your perspective on like social media and even moving forward, how you would, you know, what kind of content you post or like your whole, I guess, mission with it or like your attitude towards it? Cause I mean, you had a huge Instagram. I think now your Instagram, you probably don't even care to grow it or, you know, care for it like that. But how did that change your attitude towards social media and how you moved on social media?
Yeah, I think it was a good wake up call that anything can be pulled away from you quickly. You know, those guys that had my Instagram hacked and taken down, like it or not, that was a moneymaker. And that was also a great source of connection for a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? I had 55,000 followers and all the DM conversations and people that I hadn't gotten their phone numbers and stuff. And so it was just one of those things that it kind of sucked. But when all that was happening, it was really interesting because almost all of those people are messaging me privately asking for money to make it stop.
Yeah, that's wild to me.
50,000 and we'll stop and take all this stuff. I'm like, okay, that's blackmail, first of all. And if I feed into this, nothing better is going to come out of it. If I pay, nothing's going to happen. You know, just like I did get blackmailed with the Instagram. They took it down. I paid them to get it back and they didn't. So I went to my friend at Instagram, got the account back myself, and then they took it down again. And so it's like, it just is what it is. But the fact that people are making up dozens of false claims saying I stole $16,000, like I don't sell a product for $16,000. There's no transaction I have that is $16,000. It makes no sense. And so all of that stuff is just, it really kind of showed me, wow, people can switch up quick and people can be disgusting and people can lie very aggressively. Mm-hmm. And anything can happen. So it was a good wake up call. It reminded me not to put all my eggs in one basket. And I had stepped away from social media about a month and a half before to focus on all the e-commerce stuff that then led to the losses with the business partner. And around that time, we were doing, you know, a couple hundred thousand a week in sales. A month later, after all the cancel stuff had happened, I was doing about $1 million a week. So I was like, who gives a shit? You know, like I'm on track now. This, the one store, the Mac Daddy, was on track for 45, 50 million bucks. And so I was like, who cares? Like I made a smart decision mm-hmm. social media. I made a series of other bad decisions inside the e-commerce space, but it was a good learning experience. And, you know, social media, man, it can go with you or against you in a big way. I had a friend call me yesterday. He texted me. He's like, hey man, like, can you call me as soon as you can? I need your advice on something. He had watched that video and it was great. I had a lot of friends reach out, very supportive about that. Some people further in the industry that I'd connected with once or twice reach out and say it impacted them a lot. One of them called and I called him and he was asking for advice. There's a big article coming out about him. He doesn't know how negative or positive it's going to be. You know, just like any service-based business, he has some clients that doesn't get results. Now they do an amazing job. And he's not in the e-commerce industry at all, but he's like, they're asking for comment. And it's like the largest news outlet. I'm not going to say the name. Everybody here will know it, but he's like, should I give him a comment? And I dug into it. I was like, look, it's a new journalist making this hit. Negativity sells. The only reason he's looking for a comment is for another way to potentially spin it negatively. That's mm-hmm. it. And so I told him how to respond if you chose to, because I didn't respond to anybody publicly
yeah.
who was coming to me. I stayed silent because I saw other people. I mean, they were doing this with a lot of people, but I seemed to like kind of be the leader in the face of it, probably because I was the biggest in the e-commerce space.
You were.
Yeah. And so they were coming at me and I saw how other people responded. And I think it made it worse for them, how they responded. So I just took a back seat. I'm like, you can't, what are you going to do? Fight stupid with stupid? Like you can't fight it. And so I'm like, just whatever, just move forward. I kept making money. I kept doing my thing. I knew what my ethics were, you know, I stayed focused on that long-term vision. And so it didn't necessarily alter what I posted on social media. I became a little more private on personal details. Now I was already a private person before. Mm-hmm. You know that, like I wouldn't be talking about personal stuff, relationships, location, where I am. Like I still don't post until I'm gone, like that sort of thing. But you know, for me, I stayed true to what my mission was on social media, which was to provide accurate and transparent information about my journey. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So I just that's what you
did. A lot of people, like in your circle, or when that whole thing was happening, did a lot of people switch up, or did you see a change in, like, you know, how people treated you and how some people that you thought were like cool with you, like, you know, act different towards you when that happened?
Only people that were distant, never friends. Like there's dozens of people in the industry you've connected with, bumped into them, maybe had a call here or there, like, you know, you know of them, you text a couple times, whatever it is, you know. A lot of those people just, you know, I never followed up with them. They never followed up with me. So they just kind of like drifted off into the distance. maybe you can still talk to them. Who knows? It's not like they probably hate you, but there's people who definitely put some space. There was a couple of those people as well who had said some stuff online about me. They didn't quite pile in, but like little negative jabs here or there. And so like that was noticed. And now multiple of those people are coming back. Some of them have asked me to be on their podcast. And it's just like, just go fuck yourself. You know, I'm not a hateful person at all. I don't hate anybody.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just like, you know, if that's the type of person, then that's the type of person I don't want to be around. So,
yeah. By the way, do you even have any cars right now? Do you own any cars? Did you sell all your cars? Even the Lambo? I think I saw in the video you said.
Sell the Lambo. Yeah. I still do have two cars. I have one car here on the island, my freaking beach cruiser Ford Explorer that Uber driver rammed into the other day.
No way.
Could not stop laughing. Island is just a sketch show. So I don't care at all what happens to that car. And then I have a GTR in Arizona that I'm selling. It's up for sale. So
right. Is that the one on TikTok where the wheel just fell off as you're driving?
Yeah. For whoever's buying it, the car is completely fixed. Like 12 grand back into it. It's crazy. But I only bought that because I had sold the Lambo and I needed a car for a couple months while I was in Arizona. So I bought that. It was a really good deal. I won't lose a ton of money. It was basically cheaper than renting a Prius for 5 months. So
Right. Yeah. Well, what's the current state of what you're doing, man? What does your day-to-day life look like? I know you say like, you know, you've been traveling a lot lately. What you been up to recently?
Yeah. All of the travels pretty much have been real estate focused.
Okay.
You know, meeting up, masterminds, meetings, all sorts of that stuff every month. And then travels on a more frequent basis recently, like for the property in Cleveland, I was just there last week. I'll be up there next week, going through, doing all the due diligence, 2 full days, 12 hours a day of inspection, going through every little detail on the building, talking to every tenant and just going through the whole process. So that's been great. Sounds weird, but I'm having a ton of fun doing that. For my time split, over the last year, I've been basically 50-50 between my business on the e-commerce and personal brand side and the other 50 on real estate. So it's been a big split silently that people don't really know about because I'm kind of moving towards that direction where we're going to scale aggressively with the real estate. So, you know, I brought on an asset manager who already has raised money before and has a ton of properties. So he has 80, 90, 100 properties. Who knows? He's gone through all this. And he's a really good friend of mine, Justin, and he's going to be kind of more day-to-day on a lot of these properties, handling the management side of things, working with the management companies that we hire, as well as the employees that we hire for the properties. My other friend, Tim Bratz, who owns about $500 million worth of real estate, he's inside of this newer project I'm doing. He's financially on the hook as well, just like we all are. Like he's fully involved, which is great. So like just partnering with the right people, getting the right information. And now it's like, hey, let's scale. Like I'll probably be in Alabama next weekend, right before I end up in Cleveland, doing a walkthrough on a 106 unit property that I submitted an offer on yesterday for $6.4 million. So I'll try and buy that property for 6.7, 6.8. So, you know, making offers, being active, being involved, learning this game and meeting more brokers. And, you know, it's been really fun. You know, friends of Marcus and Millichap's and some of the biggest brokerages in the world, like Bricadia, like it's like proper connections that people can't usually get.
Yeah, that's awesome. How do you make sure like, you know, you are almost like segmenting your time properly where you can make sure that you're giving enough attention to your business that you have on the e-com side and also make time for the real estate, then your personal life as well? Like, how do you make sure like, you know, I guess don't want to use the word balance, but almost like making sure that the main things that you're doing get the right attention?
Sure. Split attention is the death of all entrepreneurs. It will kill you.
Right.
Told me before, it's something that I actively notice over the last 2 months. I've had too much split. Not the e-commerce and real estate. There's just been too many individual things with the real estate because I'm new. So like, okay, setting up the software that we're using that's going to have a whole portal for our clients and automatic payments and tax documents. I got to spend time learning that. I got to talk to the people with that software. I had to do demos with 5 different softwares and talk to the attorneys, learning what the paperwork looks like. So there's more learning that once you do it once, you don't have to do it again. And so to combat that, I've sacrificed basically all of my personal life recently, right? Because I'm a little bit more of a lazy person. It might not quite seem like it because I always get my stuff done, but sometimes I drag it out. So in order right now to make sure that I get everything done and I have enough time to do it properly, I spend all of my day working. The only break I get is I go to the gym for 60 minutes. That's it. And so I spend all of my day. I skip my first meal of the day just so I have more time to work. I just eat a protein bar, have them before this. And so for me, it's just let's just make sure everything gets done. I have my list. You know me, I do it all on paper. I have my big whiteboards. I have dozens of pieces of paper taped over the walls. I make sure I get things done. And I segment certain hours of the day. So I don't go super detailed. I can kind of do tasks as needed and calls pop up. But, you know, if I need to film a video, like right now I'm making some new videos for our course as well, and we're opening up a private community. So I'll spend like a couple hours today doing that. You know, I'll kind of say like, hey, this the morning half of the day, let me do this. And then later in the day, I'm going to do real estate. So once I finish this, then I can completely switch mental gears and go to a different topic. I don't like to go back and forth, if that makes sense. You know, so when I'm in it, I'm in it.
I love that. Quickly on the personal branding side, man, I seen you as someone that has kind of been really good with a lot of these good, you know, social media platforms. I mean, I think the first time we connected was because you were the IG guy, you know, growing pages, even on YouTube, you know, you were one of the top e-com YouTubers. And now I see you on TikTok as well. I think you have over 100K followers and such. Well, what's like I would love to talk about the TikTok, because I was going to ask you about that, you know, how that's been. But what's your favorite platform, and, you know, what are you focused on when it comes to the personal branding side?
Sure. I think Instagram is kind of the best middle ground all around in terms of quality and whatever you're trying to do and a conversation place. YouTube is just long form information. I think it's important to have, but it's not the hugest sales driver, you know, anything personal brand related. I think it's still mostly Instagram. TikTok, I've never used it from a lead perspective or from a promotion perspective. I never really promoted much on there. And as weird as it is to say, like, I have 120,000 followers on there and I put almost no attention on it. I don't promote on it. I don't do anything. And it's because it's just such a fast platform to build. I haven't put a lot of effort into it to get to 120, which is crazy. So you're about to see me. I've never mentioned this before, but I'm going to go majorly viral on TikTok. Like, there is one person now. We both know who the one person is in the world who is properly going viral. He is everywhere. He is very controversial. I'm about to go very, very viral on TikTok, and I'm about to spend a lot of money to do it. And it is a new platform and it works, and there's a limited window of opportunity. So that will be a lot of fun.
No, for sure, man. I've been seeing the power of TikTok just in, like, you know, your day-to-day life, you know, just even like certain things that are popular, or you hear someone say something and like, that's from TikTok. Like, or yo, I went to Nepal and there was a street, you know, people that sell food on the street. Yeah. There was one guy that just went viral on TikTok, and now there's a line. There's a bunch of people that sell the same thing, but there's a line for him because he was viral on TikTok. Or like, this spot became viral and their whole business changed. Like, man, TikTok is one of the craziest platform I'm seeing. Even just like you, man, I'm getting heavy into just being more consistent on posting there, and I think just increasing the volume of how much, you know, output I have on TikTok. But yeah, man, shit, a lot to look forward to. I'm excited to see you go viral, bro. I can definitely see that. I can definitely see that going happening.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I mean, TikTok is really simple. You have to either pull at someone's emotion in some way, you know, through storytelling, through whatever it is, or just straight up piss people off, which is still an emotion. You have an emotion. And dude, I've done both strategies that work incredibly well. Like, I did a long format on TikTok, 3 full minutes explaining like one of my crazier date stories. And about 80% of it was true, but you got to throw in a couple of details to keep the story flowing. And it worked. 400,000 views. Like, I knew it would. And so it's just
right.
Things. And do I make any money at all from that? No. Maybe $2 from like the creator thing, but I don't even know how to get paid from that. I've never been paid. And so it's like it's just one of those like funny, stupid things, but who knows? You get enough people to see you, mass attention, and maybe a few, you know, a couple percent move over to Instagram or whatever. Who knows? So
right, for sure, yeah. For sure.
It'll be a lot of fun. We're gonna cut some of this podcast as well, do some short format and just play around. So that'll be fun. I'm excited for it.
For sure, man. Me as well. Before we end this podcast, man, I just want to say again, man, I always appreciate you. You know, I look up to you. I'm very grateful to have you in my circle. You're someone that has always inspired me. Even like seeing you in this real estate journey has given me a lot of ideas of, you know, how to like things to think for long term. And even this, the 2 weeks we spent together, bro, like, and I know it was just 2 weeks for you, but those 2 weeks was a very, very key moment in my life that changed how I thought, my goals, even just seeing how, you know, you were frugal like that. That helped me a lot too, because that said a lot about your long-term thinking. So I just want to thank you for that. But before we end it off, I just kind of want to ask you, I guess, you know, what's the future for Hayden, man? I know you said you have what, one more year left in the whole Puerto Rico program. Are you going to stay there again? I know you're going to be doing more real estate, but what's the future for Hayden looking like?
Yeah, man. First of all, I appreciate it. Much love to you as well, man. The time in Newport was incredible. It's been great watching you grow your company and travel a lot as well. You've been going all over the
place. Yes, sir.
But yeah, man, as for what's next, who knows about Puerto Rico? From a legal perspective, you have to have the intent to live there forever, definitely. So who knows what's going to happen? You know, maybe a couple of years, and then something happens. I'll probably do a little bit beyond the three, but it really just depends. A lot more real estate is coming next. Just consistency in the personal brand, the e-commerce stuff. You know, I don't make crazy amounts of money from it. It's not 5-10 million a year, but it's a consistent base. I can, you know, throw money aside into real estate, and that's where I want to grow long-term anyways, and continue to grow the business, like the e-commerce stuff. You know, with TikTok is going well, so we're working on that and chipping away. So it'll be a lot of fun. And that's what's next, man. I'm having fun in the current season that I'm in, which is over the last 2 years, selling off most of my stuff, a little bit less like items, you know, like there's not a lot of stuff, which has been a very interesting change. And so just getting a little bit lighter on that side of things, investing all the money, which sometimes is difficult. Like I sold the Lamborghini for 270,000, right? I had an offer to buy it back from the same guy who bought it for $235,000.
Jeez.
So $35,000, like in that car all day long is worth 270. He just needs that. And so it was like just such a good opportunity. Like that was just disgustingly cheap. I didn't take it, you know? And so there's other cars I want to buy, and there's other stuff I want to do, and there's places I want to travel to. And I'm just not right now. And so, you know, I'm in that season where it's a little bit more business focused and investment focused, and later this year I will do a little bit of travel. I'm super excited for that, but it's heavy focus on the business, because as of right now it's no longer myself and my money, right? There's investors involved, there's other people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as we open up, like right now we're raising 1.4 million and I guarantee we're going to do it again with 3 million, 5 million, 10 million, 20 million. It's no longer just me. And so there's a fiduciary responsibility there to take care of other people and the investors, and to make sure that enough attention is put on that. So that's been a big focus of mine, just to make sure that it's taken care of, you know?
Hell yeah, man. I hope to see you this year, you know, maybe somewhere where we travel together, or if you're there somewhere, I'd like to pop in and do an in-person podcast. I know we've talked about that for a while. So when's the last time we saw each other, bro? I'm trying to think. Was it Bali? Am I tripping?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So funny story for everybody here real quick. We're all driving. We're down in Kuta in Bali.
Oh, my God.
TB here is on he's in the very back. We get to this stop. We're headed down to this resort that I always go to every year there, and it's a chill spot to work. And we're like, where's PB? Where the hell did he go? And we're like, wait a second. I was about to turn around and go back after you. And then you come around this corner, just like covered in dirt. There's being dragged by your scooter. It's all scraped up. You're like bleeding down your arm and like face and knee. Just like driving on the scooter, like coming towards us. It's like, you know, the scooter's a little fucked up. And I was just like, oh my God. What the hell? And you would just ate it right into it.
Oh, man. I still remember that, man. That was an interesting time, bro. It was because realized like it was still one of my first times like riding scooters. I think it was because I was using the front brakes a lot, and I didn't know you're not. Yeah, exactly, right? So like I don't know this until after my accident, so very expensive lesson. You know, but a fun time, man. Fun time. So that's crazy to think it's been over 3 years since we've linked in person. So man, I definitely want to make it out to Puerto Rico. I know Tanner's out there as well. Trevor's still there?
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Okay, definitely got to make a trip out there whenever, you know, you guys are free and you guys are all there. I want to see all you guys. It's been a while, but man, I want to say thank you so much for doing this podcast again, bro. Like, it's always a blessing, you know, catching up with you. And definitely, I think the next one's going to be an in-person one, which I'm excited for. So, yeah, to everybody listening, go follow Hayden and on his socials. I'll post it down below, the Instagram, the YouTube, and the TikTok. And thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.